The hairdressing of a chava. So now we're on the sixth line here. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. No? Yes.
Yeah.
Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, godelet kochelet kokeset la'atzma ptura v'chavretah chayevet. Actually, I mean, if you think about it, the issues that have been raised in Hamatzniya in general are things that are normally done one particular way in which we are being koveya them, either through hatzna'a, determining this is the way I want to do it, in an unusual way. There are a lot of issues that are spread on the borderline of Kila'ach Yad. Here, when it comes to the various hairdressing elements, there is indeed a slight distinction between doing things for your own self, which is a little bit more difficult. There's a reason that women are preening each other all the time, and it's not only their relationship to other primates. It's because it's difficult to do such things for yourself. It's very hard to be braiding your own hair. You can't exactly see what you're doing, and everything is backwards. You can't really put on makeup the same way as you would when somebody's doing it for you. Therefore, says Rav Shimon ben Elazar, it depends, l'halacha. If you do the godelet, the braiding, or the kochelet, the eyeshadowing, or the pokeset, which we had a number of different pirushim about, la'atzmahtura, for herself, she would be putter, because that indeed is not the proper way to do it. If she's doing these hairdressing or other makeup things to a friend, then that's being done correctly, professionally, and well. And therefore she's chayevet, but otherwise, although it would be asur, it's still not considered to be melechet machshevet because it's somewhat kila'ach riyat. V'chein, haya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer mishum Rabbi Eliezer, isha lo ta'avir tzrak al paneha mipnei shetzobar, a woman should not put rouge on her face, because that's a type of dying. Tanur Rabbanan, hacholev v'hamechabetz v'hamegabein kigogeret, the shiur to be chayev for milking, we'll see what this is all about in terms of the chiyuv later, milking, or mechabetz would be, according to Rashi, when you have a soft mass of milk that has congealed, let's say what we would call a leaven kind of thing, you put it into what they would use was reed. But I mean, we use nowadays, cheesecloth.
Yeah.
And it drips through, and then what's left, you're left with a hard mass. That is considered to be a mechabetz. A megabein would be to actually create the gvina. And I mean, according to Chazon Ish, it would be chayav even, let's say, if you sprinkled, they used today powders to sprinkle over masses to have them congeal into a hard cheese. So any pu'ula, which is the mode of creating cheese, is what's referred to here. And the shi'ur of all of these things is a grogeret. Hamechabed, sweeping.
The result, you want it.
Yeah. Hamechabed, somebody who is sweeping a floor. Remember, of course, that the floors that we're referring to over here are floors that are made out of dirt, really. They're just raw floors. And therefore, you run into the problem of ashviyei gumot, mirabeds. It's again, where you have a dirt floor, or a very dusty floor, you would sprinkle. You go around with a little, what we use for ironing. They would go running around the house with it and sprinkle it, and that would keep the dust down. And also, it was likely, if you got a lot of water in one location, to basically let the floor flow, because it is mud, so it's a free-flowing floor, it'll flow and even out the areas that were uneven before, and that's a type of binyan, as we'll see. V'harodeh chalot dvash, somebody who takes out from a beehive the honey. In all of these cases, shagag b'shabbat chayav chatat, and even on Yom Tov, hezid b'Yom Tov loke arba'im, David Rebeliez. V'chachamim omrim, echad zeh v'echad zeh, eino ela mishum shvut, whether it's Shabbat or whether it's Yom Tov, there is no chiv on any of those, there's only an isur d'rabanan, a lot of discussion as to why that's true in terms of Mechabed and Merabes, but clearly we're not going to have a Machlokas over here, which is the Machlokas of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Out of nowhere, suddenly find another Shita as to whether this is considered to be a Dovah Sheino Mitkaven, to be Mashved Mumot. It's very difficult to believe. Among the Rishonim, there's a couple of approaches to this. One is very interesting, which is that the Machloket is what is considered to be a Ksik Reisha in terms of the percentages of success. In other words, suppose you would say that it's more than 50% likely that you will be mashra guma. Is that considered to be a psik ratio, or is a psik ratio literally a psik ratio? The chances of a chicken dying when you cut off its head for your child to use as a puppet approach 100%. I mean, you know, you do see a lot of chickens just wandering around. But, you know, so seriously, here we got this problem. There's a lot of people wandering around when I had some. But that's an interesting question. That's a fundamental question. What do we mean by psikration? It could be the machlokas over here between Rav Eliezer and Chachamim.
There are other
approaches. One of the most reasonable is that that type of ashriyei gumot, which is something that occurs every time you sweep your floor or every time you'll do harbatza, is not bone, because bone is something that's meant to stay that way, not something that's constantly being moved back and forth. How do you call that bone? So the most it would be an issue of similarity to bone. And everybody would then be moaning, yes, it is a secretion, but secretion in terms of what? Sorry, what was it?
Why in this case that we often bring in, you think anytime you find chatos?
Because here you're dealing with foodstuffs. Sweet. And you would think, the chalot vash, you would think that there are elements that may be different even on those malachot, because we'll see in Beitza that there are certain malachot that we're matir for the ochel nefesh, and other ones that are on a primitive level, and then back to the levels of ketir and so on and so forth, that are not included in the things that you need to do today for ochel nefesh. So, there you would be chayiv, you would be according to Rabbanan, only over on a shvut. Renakum Baguria came into Narda, which was a big mistake, because they had a lot of questions that they were holding for him, you know. So anyway, everybody comes over, there's a big Talmud Chacham coming to town, let's clear up some things that have been bothering us. So Bo'amine, they came and they asked him, Choleiv, Mishumai Mechayiv, what's the Isser that you're called? Chayiva. He said, that's called the Isser of Choleiv. That's brilliant. Mechabetz Mishumai Mechayiv. Well, I learned that's called Mechabetz. Mm-hmm. Megabein mishumai mechayev. Amalu mishum megabein. Amrulein, you know, that's brilliant. But obviously you studied by a guy, Rabcha kotel kani ba'agmahave. Your Rebbe was somebody who collected reeds at the pasture. You know, but this is the mushel to collecting reeds in a, not a pasture, the agma is a swamp, is that you pick a piece here, you pick a piece there. There's no particular structure. And what it is that you get is basically nothing you can lean on. So, what kind of Rebbe did you study by? Here's Halacha Choleiv, because Choleiv is awesome. I mean, that's really brilliant. Anyway, he felt pretty bad, of course, about this. So, Ata Shayo Bei Medrash, and he went back home, he figured he better find out about this. Omrulei Choleiv is Chayav Mishum Mifarek. Mifarek is when you take one usable thing out of something else that you're unable to use, and that's a Toldav Dash. Because that's what you're doing in Disha, when you're doing threshing, you're basically breaking out the usable portion from an entirety. Over here you have an udder, essentially, of a milk-producing glands, in which you've got to get the milk out of the gland, which is similar to getting out the actual tfua from the hard shell. In order to get that kernel out, you're being mifarek, being dot, so to choleiv. Mechabetz, in order to be able to remove the water content from the, to give you a hard, not hard, but a cheese consistency, you are going to be borer, really, because you're putting it into a basket, a cheesecloth, and that is, that's called borer. Megabein is chayav mishum boneh. This is a type of binyan, where you take something that previously couldn't stand on its own, and you now make it stand. So you're putting something together. Actually, Rashi even includes the togetherness element, because you'll often have in part of the process of Gibbon is bringing the little pieces together until they settle into a cake, and then it's hard. So that type of hardening is called binyan.
Sifter, what's
coming out. I don't know why, sifting is slightly different here, but the strainer?
The strainer, yeah. The strainer, so what's coming out of the sifter?
Remember, specifically when it comes to borer, we have three levels, which the Gemara asked before, don't they all boil down to the same thing? We talked about the way it was similar, the Mishkan, to a very specific pu'ula. So we'll distinguish between borer, which was the gross removing of pebbles and so on and so forth from what's even left, and, you know, from sifting per se. So you should be more careful in the translation, because borer is particularly a gross, two completely different type of objects. So the sifting is where you're gonna take out using a kli the larger pieces. But smaller, there's a lot of discussion as to what the differences are. I'm just
right. And so I don't consider what's in the cloth what I want really. Taking out the stuff that's coming out the other end, so to speak, but that way I'm taking that out from the good. I mean, if I look at it like I'm taking the what's in the cloth, which is the cheese, and it's good from that. But it's, it really goes by the other direction, so to speak.
You're saying when
I have a cheese cloth.
I mean, right. Yeah.
So I'm pouring the milk into it, and what's neglected is the.
Yeah, but. Yeah, why don't we wait until we get into the butter issues? I mean, it's a very good point that you're making, but it was sort of agav to our
situation. Regarding cheese making, is it anything
that's
similar to that?
Cement or other type of cheese? No. Anything that would be similar to that would be, actually. If there's an agent that will catalyze a hardening, we would say that's considered to be garav mona. That's a good point. And I don't know if that's a particular thing that's done. I get that, you know, there's certainly... Certainly, I can imagine there are such things. It's not coming to mind. So, okay, that would be a binyan. Hamechabed v'amiravet v'harodech halot dvash. Is it shagat b'shabbat chayav chatat? Hezid b'yom tov lo ke'arba'in. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. We didn't explain what the issue was. Omer Rabbi Elazar, I want to explain this to you because it certainly sounds a little bit strange to say that you would be chayav for taking out honey from a honeycomb. Why is that exact? Do we view it as something that is growing? Not growing, is it? My time at Rabbi Eliezer. Dechtiv vayitbol uta biyarot hadvash. The yarat hadvash over there, which was the whole story of Yonatan, who had, he had gone up to fight the Plishtim, and he didn't hear that his father had made a tanit, and they continued the fighting until the end, and he was very faint, and he ends up dipping a little bit into this yarat hadvash. And he's gonna eat. So what does it mean when you're talking about a yarat? That's a strange lashon, a forest of honey. I mean, what's that mean? Ma'nyan yar etzel dvash. Ela lomar lecha ma yar hatolesh mimena b'shabbat chayav chatat. The fact that the pasuk compares it to implies that we look at dvash indeed as if it's part of a forest. And in the same way, if you take something off of a tree, you would be chayav chatat. Av chalot dvash arodeh mimena b'shabbat.
Why do you want to bring a like a fool of the Sabini Aliguria? Why does that have to bring that part?
I cannot tell you the particular reason for the limit of each thing. But I'm sure by now have come to recognize that the Gemara has a desire to do something that is far beyond giving you a list of halakhas. That's obvious. The interchanges and the overall mode of communication are fundamentally part of the Gemara. Isn't that true? In other words, what's special about Gemara as opposed to any other chibur that's meant to do this kind of thing is the fact that it gives over an entire culture of how to view the approach to elements of halacha. And that's, you know, to sit and analyze why I need to know this is not going to be effective, because it would be the same thing as questioning why did such and such a facial gesture become part of the way which you, I mean, I'm not saying it's not important, but it's not the reason that we're bringing it here. We're bringing it here because we have to know what the level of intercourse is, right? Because it's fundamentally important in taking Gemara that way. People will take Gemara and strip it of its humor, and strip it of its strange idiosyncratic mode of communication, end up with something that doesn't have any of the, when I say culture, I want to use the word culture, I don't mean cultural in terms of local culture, but the Torah is a culture. The way of looking at Torah is a culture. And in the same way, you wouldn't want to study Japanese and not understand the mode of using Japanese by sitting in Japan and recognizing the way it's communicating. You can't learn Gemara when you've stripped away all of the things that don't appeal to your sensibilities and to your modes of communication. It's just impossible. I would suggest that these kind of things should just be taken for what they are. Sometimes there's particular limudim that you can be omed on, but that, I don't think that that's the point, to create a particular limud. I mean, there's barely a daf in Gemara that doesn't have something that strikes us as being very funny, or, you know, it's meant to be cute, the same way that communication is meant to be cute. We have to understand that's part of Torah. You know, otherwise we'll be left like the Malachim who were saying, Ma'ana shkitiz karen. I mean, the Torah is meant to be in a shamayim. It's not a real culture of basur v'dag. Well, apparently, when it comes to these kind of things, there's certain levels of intolerance that are meant to be part of the way in which you view reality. And there's people are ready to walk around saying things that are like, cholev is chayev mishum cholev, then it's important to recognize, because there's a lot of people who do that. Today, you find almost everybody does that. Why do you do that? Because that's us. Okay, so you have to know that this is basically what you're doing. I don't mean to be dull for your question. I don't know the answer to the specific question. I just think that it might be coming from something.
Maybe
that
you should have gone to the midrash before he came.
Next time, I'm sure he did. So to continue. A Meimar, Shoras Yilcha B'Mechuzah. Now, a Meimar allowed everybody in Mechuzah to water their floors on Shabbat. Now, as we know, Mechuzah was a very sophisticated city, a lot of rich people in Mechuzah. And Tosis points out earlier that what's unique about Mechuzah in terms of the Salvata is that the entire city was paved for houses. In other words, nobody had dirt floors. Based on this, this is actually mechalik, a halacha, that those dinim that are said as a din to us are doing certain things do not apply where they have no local application. So if you live in a place where rich people have marble flooring, but the rest of the population has got dirt floors, we're not going to be matir for the rich people to do sweeping of their floors. But where this becomes the norm in a particular location, it's an absurdity to apply halachas that are gezeiras. Because in this particular place, what do you mean? Don't sweep your floor because it would be mashma gumas. What in the world are you talking about? So therefore, and there are others who are actually the Ramban is scholar on Tosis's explanation. Tosis uses this as why it is that we are, in other cases, remember we had in the Aliyah, where it was there was flooring. So he says, so what? So people are going to say, you're allowed to and I'm not allowed to. So Tosis uses that as the difference. Depends if this is a city in which you have such floors, or a location in which you happen to have such a floor. Again, the Ramban says, look, you know, you have to, much weaker explanation. He says, you don't expect every particular gezeirah din in your Shabbos to apply in exactly the same way. Maybe certain things we understand that people are able to maintain a distinction in their brain, and other things they're not, and we make it blanket. That's how he's machalic between the two Gemaras. But Tosfos has become accepted lahalacha, Tosfos' approach. So therefore, any of the gezeirahs that would have to do with things that would perhaps create a segregation problem in one location. If in this location it's not nugea, then we don't apply it.
So, the
well, that's really what the Ramban is saying. He's saying you don't compare the gezeira of stam. But that's only in terms of being mutmata in gezeira. I'm saying that there's no grounds anymore for this issue. But not because the logistics of the application of gezeira are ridiculous. In other words, if you're saying Chazal said don't use chalav from goyim because maybe they'll mix it, and you want to come along and say well, but there's no chashash of mixing. There you might be able to say, you know, well, there might be other issues. After all, they could have been taking into consideration social things, like by drinking wine. Maybe they wanted you to be misrachic. Okay, but I mean, here where this is a particular issue of something that would be a possibility of obscuration, there is no
word.
No, even there, but the reason per se is obscuration reason. That's the problem. So where the whole thing can't apply, I mean, so then I'm not even within the set of these areas that we're talking about. It's not that there's another reason that has appeared that handles your problem. I've got a problem of mixing non-kosher. Okay, I can handle that problem by putting in cameras and assigning a fine. You know. You're trying to handle it. Don't tell me you're going to handle it, okay? This was the gezeira that we made, and it had a lot of other implications and so on. But that's not the problem over here. What it is that I said is going to happen can't happen. That's the point.
A neighbor, I guess, would be saying that even at the time when they made the gezeira.
Correct, 100%. It wasn't meant to be anything but pointing out the problem. So Omar, Taima Mai, Omar Rabbona, why did the Rabbanan say that you're not allowed to do Revitza? Because of the possibility of smoothing your floors. Well, Chaleka Gumas, I mean, we don't have any floors to smooth. They're all marble. Rabba Tosva, should say, Ashkechel Ravina, become Itztayer Mehavala. It was a very hot Chamsin, and Ravina was sitting there. It was really dusty and boiling, there it was like sort of like this air conditioner. Oh my lay! So he was wondering why he didn't do anything to make life easier on himself. Lo sovel amar la hada tanya. Do you not agree with the writer that says harotzel rabetz et beto b'shabbat? Even if you've got a floor that is dirt, there's a way to do rebuts. Because look, what you could do is you bring an areva, you bring a sink that's full of water. And, you know, you wash your face in one corner. Well, inevitably, water splashes, you know, your face drips. You walk to another corner, and there you wash your hands in the other corner. Then you walk to the other side of the floor, you wash your feet. And meanwhile, things are dripping all over the place. And there you go. You've got reboots. So, I mean, you could have worked it out. I mean, the point of the Isser is not to pour water over the entire floor and so on. But they certainly didn't answer having water yet on the floor. Nimsa by mitrabeitz, meilad. Look at that, a reflexive reboots. Omalei, lavadatzai. Actually, I just wasn't thinking. Tana ishaka chama, because she's got a woman who's smart. She knows what to do. Miravetzet beita b'shabbat. Actually, ha'idna, the svirlan k'Rabbi Shimon, shoriha filo l'chatchila. Nowadays that we hold of Rabbi Shimon, we could do this even without playing games, because in any look, in any type of situation where you're not going to do a psik resha, Tosfos discusses how far you're going to go. You're going to say you can use even a type of broom that has hard bristles. Wouldn't that definitely be? That's even that would be also even I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon. Okay, but it talks about Bishel Tamara or what type of broom it is. But in any event, as long as you don't have a psik resha, it would be mutter even lechatchila. He doesn't want the floor to be smooth. He wants the floor not to be dry, so there's not dusty in the room.
That's no problem.
No, there's no problem at all making the floor wet. Hatolesh meyatzitz nakut. Again, we have another one of these matzniya type of things. You're doing the malacha. They're doing it in a way which it's not quite what they did in the Mishkan. They weren't carrying around flower pots with them in order to get things that they needed. So why, if you're tolesh, but there's a hole in the bottom of the pot, is that hole, even though the roots don't extend through the hole, is that considered to be an attachment of the pot to the ground? Says the Tanakam, it is indeed, and you would be chayav. But if it's a closed pot without any hole, she'eino nakur, it would be potur. Rabbi Shimon, poter b'zeh b'zeh. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's not considered to be mechuber at all, since it's not really connected to the ground.
It's a matter of ecclesia?
Yes, actually it does, but not for our purposes right now. But yes, because the idea over here is not physical. Now, suppose you have a tzitznokur that is on a stand, on a tripod. It makes no difference. Because what we're looking at over here is not the actual connection, but strangely enough, we're looking at the idea of yinika even through absorption, vapor, and so on and so forth. So in other words, it's considered to be open to the impact of the ground under it. That's the point, rather than connected to the ground literally. Therefore, as far as your question are concerned, there are certain porous materials which could be considered to be nokuv as well in the material itself. But we'll see what the size of nikkav.
Flower pot?
Is that mutter? It's poter.
Potter. A vase.
A vase is a different issue. You're talking about where you have water, flowers, and water. Okay, that's a different question. That's because it's similar to, nothing to do with this at all, but because it's, since that's its mokum of chias right now, does it look similar to kisira? Certainly nobody would be mechayev, obviously. Rami le'abaya l'roba, v'hane le'vechia balad l'ra. Abaya points out a contradiction. Rabbi Barab puts out a contradiction. So now, on the one hand, our Mishnah says that Rabbi Shimon poter b'zeh b'zeh, which leads me to conclude that in Rabbi Shimon's opinion, there's absolutely no difference whether you have a nekev in that pot or not. According to Rabbi Shimon, a pot is not the ground. I don't care if it has a hole in it and it's connected to the ground, close to the ground, yonit from the ground. It's not. That's not considered to be mechuber to the karka. According to him, nakuv is kisheinu nakuv mashvelaita. He makes it exactly the same. The problem is, v'raminu, Rabbi Shimon omer, ein bein nakuv l'sheinu nakuv, ela lai hachshir zra'im bilvat. There is, in fact, a difference between an atzitz nakuv and an atzitz sheinu nakuv. What is that difference? The difference is that if water gets on something which is planted inside of a flower pot, if there's no nekev in that pot, then it's the same as water getting on something in a container after it's been and now it can be makabel tumah because it's moksha makabel tumah. But if it's got a hole in it, then it's not considered to be picked. Then it's as if it's connected to the ground. Now, I mean, if that's the case, by hechsher zroyim lekula, How do you explain the fact that L'chorma, when it comes to Shabbos, I mean, you're talking about Chilul Shabbos, that he ignores that distinction? That apparently is the problem, because if that first point, that's not a real problem. He said the theorist, there's no difference other than, I mean, good, so he's perfectly consistent. I mean, the question is on his logic, not on the consistency of his statements. Or Marley, so he explained to him that it is logically consistent, because the truth is, L'chol Mile Rabbi Shimon Ketolush Mashkelein. Actually, a flower pot is considered to be Tolush, according to Rabbi Shimon. The thing is, though, since it would be Tolush, and you would say, well, if it's Tolush, then even if it's got a hole in it, you know, even if it doesn't have a hole in it, and I would let water fall on this thing. Right? So let's say we want to view it as something that would be Mekabel Tumah. Fine, but if it has a hole in it, I should say, what's the difference? It should also be Mekabel Tumah L'chumrah. You're right, but there's another issue when it comes to Zorayim. And that issue is that the Torah says that din of Kabbalah's Tumah, of Kabbalah's Hekshir Tumah, very repetitiously. What it says is, Alkol Zera Zeruah Asher Yizareah. Well, what is all that Zera Zeruah, Zera Yizareah, and so on? Because what's coming to tell me is that you need to have a norm, Asher Yizareah. Water that falls upon something which is in a state in which it would usually be put into the ground, that's telling you that we're not looking at a technicality over here as to whether is it considered connected to the ground or not. We're looking at something other than that technicality. We're looking at modes of behavior, Asher Yizareah. When you've got this plant inside of a planter, you are not ready to plant yet. True? Don't tell me whether it has a hole or doesn't. I mean, you couldn't care less about that, right? Yeah, right now, you're carrying something. You're saying, yeah, but I mean, it's a, maybe it's a, technically not mechuvah lekar. That's not the point. Are you ready to plant this? I mean, don't you have to pull it out in order to plant it and so on? So therefore, the Torah is adding now, on some level, a distinction when it comes to hekshir tumah. So shinyling in tumah, da Torah ripta taharai sozoi. The Torah here is insistent to not look just at the technicalities, but rather to look at an additional stage in which something maybe would technically be considered to be Tolush, which is what I hold, even though it's got a hole. And yet, on the other hand, is not quite ready for planting. Shenemar ha'kol zera zeruah asher yizareah. Boi mine ahu saba mi Rebbe Zera. There was this famous old man, you know. I guess he wasn't always old, though. And he would ask a lot of questions, but you know, we saw earlier, he maybe was ailing on, because you know, you never can tell. But he asked Rabbi Zera, according to Rabbi Shimon, is the idea basically that the environment that you're in, you being the shoresh of this plant, the environment that you're in is not mechuvah lekarka because there's a pot around you? Or is it the deal that you are protected from exposure to the ground by being in a pot? The difference is, suppose you, locally, Mr. Plant, look straight beneath you and there is that hole. Now you don't see the pot. You only see the ground. And if, in fact, you had extended through that hole and moved yourself into the ground, we would have happily called you planted and settled. And you came el amaducha el nachama. So, okay. Of course, that's only because you're very parochial in your view. But in any event, looking down, would Rabbi Shimon hold that you're still in the pot? Because how far does he take this thing? Is it, it's the environment, or is it that you're not exposed to the ground? So if there's a hole that's directly beneath the root, maybe even he would agree that that's on the ground. I mean, what difference does it make, really? That there's ground on top of the ground. He's like, yeah, but around it there's something else. Well, who cares what's around it? Or is there really a sense of the environment that you're in? It's not the planet. You're in a kli. Is that the point? So Maliam Rabbi Shimon, if you have the Shorish Kenegan on Neka, what would Rabbi Shimon hold then? And he didn't give an answer. Ishtik Vlomale below Mide Rabbi Zera did not have an answer for that. Zimna Khadana one time, Ashfe the Yosefika Amar, he finds Rabbi Zera sitting and saying, Moda Rabbi Shimon, Shimnike Bihteta Arato, that then if the plant is in a planter where the hole is so large that it basically is now tohar, the planter is tohar b'lekabel tumah, and as we'll see, so, but I'm sure you remember, we have various shiurim for what's the size and what materials, kriteris, and so on, to be mekabel tumah. But Mother Rebbe Shimon, if it loses its din of being a kli in terms of kabbalah tumah, then it's considered to be, even according to Rebbe Shimon, mechuber to the ground. So Ahu Saba was pretty upset. Omar Lay, so he said to him, I don't understand you. If I asked you a question about a shorish keneged a nekev, boy, I asked you that question, velo amartavi velo mida, you weren't sure enough of your answer to give me an answer. And over there, basically, the shoresh is inside of a real container, you know, but it's exposed to the ground directly. And over here, you're ready to tell me that if there's a hole, I mean, this hole could be somewhere on the side, right? It's not even on the bottom. So that if, technically speaking, the kli is bato somewhere, that that's considered to be a thing that's mukhover. That's not the point. What he did say was, yidmar lada rabbi zera ha'achiyu yidmar, moda rabbi shimon she'in nikev l'mata mi rabbi yid, that rabbi shimon would be moda, that this particular type of kli, where the hole is in a location where it makes it impossible for the kli that's left to be mekabel a revius. So in other words, you can't really put anything meaningful into it, that over there you don't have a kli at all. Now that is a different situation. Because what I was asking you earlier, is it mechubar to the karka or not? And you weren't ready to say it was mechubar to the karka, that's because it wasn't a kli. It wasn't a kli that was significant as a kli. The case to be made alive. How about the Gabi Shabbos, where he said, it doesn't matter, I don't care if it's it. Over there, we don't have that special pasuk, and even the kula, it's not mechubar al karka. So I asked you, is it mechubar al karka where it's got a hole in the bottom, can negative shavish? Would it make a difference then? You didn't answer me. Now you're telling me it's mechubar al karka, even if it does have something connected. So I'm telling you, yes, it's mechubar al karka when it does have something connected, when that thing which is connected is not a kli. It's just a shard. That's what I'm answering you. When it comes to the kula of Zroyim, where the Torah taught this particular pasuk, over there, any level of chibur lakark would be sufficient to protect it because of the gilui hakrov. Even if it wasn't kineged the nekev. Any nekev would be sufficient.
Even on the side of the pot,
on the side of the pot. Because the over there, the Torah is willing to tell us, look at it. Bottom line is, if you're a nursery and you're shipping things out, when you're growing them, you obviously are careful, you have a natzitz vachum, right? When you're ready to ship them out, you may ship them out in these little containers, you know, in which you throw away the container. I mean, nowadays we get a little more sophisticated, these little plastic things. But that's the difference. One is zera asher yizareha, one is not. One is the zera that you're still busily making sure it gets large enough in, right? Okay, that's the difference, only lagabi there. So again, when it comes to Shabbos, what are we looking at? We're looking at the din of the kli. And a shard is not a kli. When it comes to zera, that's not an issue. Because any type of hole would be enough to pater, would be enough to make it not roy to be the kabbal
action. And how would it work? So Rachim Potter Bazev is there.
That's our question. Zel Bazev, but does it need a chain kli? Yes, it needs a chain entirely? No. But at least the Kabbalah Servias.
So therefore, in our time where the holes are on the bottom, Rachim was the most.
No, but depends on the size. In other words, over here it's talking about was Kidei Ta'arasa. Wait, I'm sorry. I must have done something wrong, but I meant that clear. The Shaila over here, there's two elements over here. One element is the actual Yanika. According to the Chachamim, that's the element that's definitive. If you have Yanika, you have a Kli, you have a Mechubar al karka. No Yanika, no Chibar al karka. Rabbi Shimon. What's that? Any hole is yanika, correct? Yes. Now the shaila is, according to Rabbi Shimon says, look, the issue is not yanika minakark. If you're talking about the din of tolesh on Shabbos, the question is it in the ground or is it in a container? A container is not the normal way that in the Mishkan they grew things, and therefore is not what you'd be chayav on. That's all I'm saying. Forget about yanika. Why is yanika definitive? Now, once I break the kli that it's in, then already we've got a separate shaila. Then, of course, what am I going to say? No, it's in a container. It's not in a container. Containers have technical definitions. That's not a container.
The definition of a kli is ignored with these.
No. The definition of a kli depends on this topic. So right now we thought that the definition of the kli is in terms of the shiur legabe tuma. If it's something that will not be mekabel tuma, then the Torah didn't give it a din of a kli. Points out Ahu Saba. Come on, man. I mean, I asked you about a realistic scenario in which it's actually mechuvin keneged hakarka. You weren't even sure enough to tell me that's considered to be, yes, we can effectively ignore the fact of tzedakah because it's irrelevant to this particular shorash. And then when it comes to the technicalities, as about shame of a kli or not of a shame of a kli, that's more important than the fact that for all intents and purposes, it's placed before the ground. I don't understand. So we answered, you're 100% right. If we were talking about the technical definition of the kli, which is, the kli has a hole in it in its side somewhere. It's not worth fixing, it's not usable, you're going to have things fall out of it, whatever. Won't be makabel tumah. Why is that relevant in terms of a tumah has a din that affects the din of Shabbos? Why would it? As far as Shabbos is concerned, you're looking at, is this the norm or is it not the norm, right? Fine. Is this the way in which things are planted or they're not the way? Are you in the ground or in a container, in quotations? But I want to clarify, obviously we're not talking about stam that it lost its din of tumah. We're talking about it's lost its din of tumah in a way and on a level in the kli, which makes it ineffective for any purpose. You would just look at it as a mechitza rather than a kli. And once it's a mechitza, it's not a technicality. I mean, this thing is useless, basically. So once it's a mechitza, it's no different than saying that something in the ground that turns out to have been planted on some shards of stone around it and so on is not considered to be planted in the ground. Of course it's considered to be planted in the ground. Right? I wasn't giving you a blanket application of dinim of tumah for the criteria of Kalim for a shinah. That's what he's answering. So I'm still doubtful about your case, whereas all the year I have no doubts.
So that's Amai's response.
That's his explanation of what Rav Zera must have said to make it consistent with the fact that he wouldn't commit himself about the other case. So once again, just to review. Our Mishnah says a kli of any kind, whether it has nekev, meaning a nekev that is meant for nourishment purposes or for draining purposes of the plant, not a nekev that affects its usability as a container. So it has a nekev in it. Makes no difference when it comes to Shabbos. Then Rabbi Shimon seems to contradict himself in terms of the rationale for his psak by saying, actually, we would be mako when it comes to Zeroyim to say that over there, if it has a nekev in it, it's considered to be planted. And it will not be Mukshar Kabbal Tumah. Asks the Gemara, does that make sense? For Shabbos, where it's a big chumrah, over there you're not ready to say it's like it's planted. You said it's potter if you take something. And for something like Tumah, when it comes to be Mako, there you're ready to say, well, yeah, but for that it's considered yes to be planted. Where do you get that from? Answers the Gemara, it's not a fair question, because the criteria for Shabbat and the criteria for Tumah are totally different. The criteria for Shabbat is whether this is a mode of planting in the ground, and the criteria for Tumah is whether this is a mode to be ready to implant in the ground. And what's the comparison between the two? Okay, then we got onto this side question. When it would come to Shabbat, you're telling me the modality of being in a container is sufficient to say it's not in the ground, despite whatever other technical issues are involved. How about if it's directly above the ground? How far does Rabbi Shimon want to take this? Do we look at the fact that it's in a container, or do we look at its exposure? I don't know. Then 2 minutes later you turn around and tell me, of course, if there's a large hole in the container, then it's definitely considered to be in the ground. So I look at you and say, you don't know when it's literally in the ground, but you do know when the container has a technical failure? Does that make sense? A technical failure is enough to tell you that this is a mode. Why would it tell you that? This is much more a realistic difference, isn't it? If I'm telling you, look, realistically speaking, there's a hole right underneath this thing. It's in the ground for all realistic purposes. And you say, well, I'm not 100% we should follow that, the question of the realistic yanika. And then you come along and you say, but I'm absolutely sure that if there's something technically wrong with the container, then forget about realism. It's ridiculous. I mean, obviously the realistic scenario is more important than the question of whether this thing has a technical din of a kli for the Gabi Tumah. Why should that affect it? That's why we needed to explain. We don't really mean the overall technical din. We're talking about right here. Is it in a container at all? That's the question. Obviously, if I would take away the container and you're now sitting in a lump of ground on the ground, everybody would agree that, of course, that's considered to be planted in the ground. But that's what I've done. I took away the container. I said, but there's a piece there. And if there was a rock, that would bother you. Okay, so now everything is consistent. Omar Rava, once we're on the topic of what the different dinim of containers, because you're right, as you pointed out, there's a concept of container lagabi Shabbat. There's a concept of container lagabi Tumah. There's a concept of container lagabi Hechsher Zeroyim. There's other containers. There's a concept of container when you're taking the pora aduma ashes, or you're taking the water and has to be Mayim Chayim El Kelly, and so on. I mean, there's all kinds of different containers. And the truth is that they have different definitions, different technical definitions. So there's Chamesh Midot B'Klicheres. Actually, and we're only talking about a klicheres, there's other dinim when it comes to metal containers because of the fact that they're repairable or expensive and so on, which are dinim and kalim. But when it comes to a klicheres, if you've got a nikef kamotzi mashke, what you've got is a tiny crack, and that crack is enough to have water inside of this so-called container. We'll see it's not really a container. And it's leaking, but it's not enough to let water in from the bottom. So in other words, you need the additional gravitational effect of the increased pressure of the water inside to break through the surface tension. You will not have enough to let water get into it. That is tahor when it comes to gistera. Now, gistera is a very special halacha of kalim, in which if you have a shattered klicheres, the shards are kept because they're valuable. And it's interesting, because Tosis points out, if you have a broken klicheres, it's not a gistera. You need to have a shattered klicheres, because the point of a gistera is that you have little shards which you use for very small purposes, either to plug up another kli, or to use for mixing glue in, and then to throw out, and that kind of thing. So that's useful. But once it leaks, even to the slightest amount, listen, I'm going to bring a using it. What am I going to bring another gistera? Put under this gistera? Forget it. You throw in the garbage. So this is the lowest level of kli imaginable, and therefore the slightest amount of leakage is mavato any type of tumah. Obviously, it's talking about you set it aside. You want to use it for this purpose. And that makes it a useful kli. Normally, of course, a kliferes, in any event, if it's broken berubo, even if it's an enormous kli, it is tahor. It loses its ability, which is what pushes Tosis to explain that gistera has a unique application. It's not just a broken kli. So if you've got a gistera, then it'll be tahor, once it's got a slight leak. But it would still be called, if you have a kli that has a leak in it, it's still a kli even for kiddush mechatat. So if you want to put water in it, and its whole purpose is to store water, is this considered to be a usable kli, as long as water can come in from the other side, for making the Mayim Chayim El Kelly and mixing it with the Para Aduman? Nikev Kikones Mashka, when the crack, and this could still be a hairline crack, but it's enough to let water in from the other side, it is no longer a kli. Tahor Milakadish Bo Mechatas, the word tahor is of course not really usable in a literal sense here, because we're not talking about Tumah V'Tahirah. We're talking about the application of using it for mechatat. As Rashi explains, the use of the word tahor is similar to the opening of Brachot, where we talked about tiher yuma. Tiher yuma means kaput, bye-bye day. Right? So if you use bye-bye kli, it doesn't mean tahor in terms of the dinim of Tumah V'Tahirah.
It's not a kli.
Not a kli, yeah. Mm-hmm. Cleared out. Tahor means it's cleared. So a dying, it may be, once it's at the point of Kones Mashka, it's Tahor Milakadosh Bo Mechatas. It's still a kli when it comes to the determination of Hechsher Zra'im. If you've got now Zra'im that are planted in such a type of kli, even according to the Rabbana, a crack, which is enough to allow moisture in, is not large enough to make it a kli nakuv, to be considered to be nourished by the ground. So even the Rabbanan would be moda that for Heksha Zra'im, these Zra'im are not connected anymore. And they are roi to be makabel Heksha. Nikev Kishorish Katan, once it has a hole in it, which is large enough for a root to make its way out of, then already it becomes now a kli, tahor, meaning it's lost its shein kli rather, and these Zroyim are not connected to the ground, even though roots didn't come out of it, but it's connected to the ground, and therefore they'll lose their ability to be Makabal Heksher. But a dying Kalihu, it's still a Kli in the classical sense of a Kli, meaning that it's a usable utensil in terms of dinim of Tumah V'Tahirah. So you could store olives in it, right? Okay, you know, olives couldn't care less about whether you've got a root that can grow out of it, and therefore, in terms of the dinim of Kabbalah's Tumah, it's still a kli, and therefore you would be able to be makabel tumah. Nikit kibbutzi zeitim. But how about if the hole is large enough at this point that you won't store olives in it because olives fall out of it? Tohor milakabel bel zeitim. So then it's not going to be makabel tuma unless you're meyached it for a particular usage that is untroubled by the loss of olives. And if you're a pomegranate, you look down on those little olives anyway. So if you're, let's say, you're meyached it, this is my kli for grapefruit serving. Fine. So then, kolakidin yodim l'tumatam. You decided to use it for serving grapefruits or pomegranate. That's fine. And then it becomes a kli, and it'll be makabel tuma. And like any other kli. But then, when it's nikif kamotzi rimonim, when it's large enough to drop pomegranates out of it, at this point, tahor miklum. You, even if you decide you want to use it to serve pomelos, that's not considered to be a normative use of this kli that has such a hole that it's now a usable instrument. It's not a use, I mean, you may make use of it, but that's not the same thing as giving it a shame to him. It's a broken kli. The fact that people might use a broken kli for a purpose doesn't give it a shame kli. And there is a technical definition of shame kli. So this is the lowest level of kli. Once it's beyond that, it's irredeemable. It will not be makabel tumor, and if it was tummy before, it will lose its tumor.
Shibri
Kaili, is this a Shibri Kaili? Have no tumor. Now, it may have been
designated as a Shem Kli, as a Kli,
no, normally, if it's going to be less than olive, in other words, the hole is larger than olive size, you'd have to designate.
So at the olive size, it loses its...
It will lose its tumor, and can now be reestablished in royal kabel tumor.
Just by you... You don't even need to do anything.
Only your thought. If you want to change your mind, then you have to do something. Because once you define a status by intent, the way to destroy that intent is by doing something affirmative to destroy it. Okay, so these would be the various stages. Now, nonetheless, I want you to know, says Rava, that imhu kaf samit patil, if this kli has got this big hole in it, which I now put something inside of it, in an ohel hamet. Now, normally, a kli cheres will only be makabel tuma from its opening. You can't be matame a kli cheres by touching its side. If it's in a tumas, in a house full of a maize, tumas maize, then it's as if the tuma invaded its inside. It won't protect something that's in it. The Torah says, however, that any kli cheres, which is mukaf samit patil, it's well sealed, so then the tumah can't penetrate, so to speak, and it saves whatever's in it, because touching its outside is irrelevant to a kli cheres. This type of kli cheres, you might think, because it's broken, does not have a shein kli at all. And therefore, for all intents and purposes, as far as tumah is concerned, it's transparent to tumah. The tumah should be able to just go directly into it. Comes along Rava to say, but if you treat it like a container and cover it carefully, and you put, say, your ring inside of it, then it's not transparent to tuma, even though it had reached this darga of being broken. Because you were makif at something patil to it. There you would need that most of the kli is gone. So there's only a shard. So this is yet a lower level kli in terms of protection when covered in olam.
And if the tzamit pasir is there, it doesn't go through the hole. So
no, the hole is covered by the tzamit pasir.
Well, the hole?
Yeah, there's no place where it could come in at all in this kli.
So it's not talking about the normal tzamit pasir, it's where the hole is.
Right. Well, also, what do you mean? There's also a regular tzamit pasir.
They have to be like two tzamit pasirs then?
I'm sorry, misunderstood you. The tumah is only nichnas to the opening. The hole
normal
is not the opening.
Right, the normal opening.
Yeah, the normal opening. I can't create a new opening, but obviously this is not meant to be its opening at all. So it's the fact that I was miyache this to be matzil with its own impressive. That will be matzil. That's something impressive. However, once it's mifchas rubo, won't help me. Let's say, in other words, I may even have the top of the kli, you know, in perfectly good shape, and I put the regular cover on it, and it fits tight, but I've got more than 50% missing down the edge to the bottom. Then it won't help anyone. Then it's not even a kli for that purpose. Right. So this clearly many, many different applications, each one with its own particular way of defining itself. Om Ravasi Shamati Kli Cheres Shiuro Kamotzi Rimon. I heard that I was makabel from my Rebbe, that the shira of the kli cheres is basically once it loses its ability to makabel rimonim. So Rava said to him, oh, well, that doesn't make sense because the shira of the kli cheres ought to be kamotzei zeitim. So maybe what you heard was shema lo shamata ela b'mukab tzamid patil. Maybe what you heard was is that if it's motzi rimon, then if it's mukab tzamid patil, it won't be matzi. Now none of this makes sense, of course, because Rava just said even if it is motzi tzamid patil, motzi rimon, a tzamid patil will be matzi. So ask the Gemara, what? But Rava, who the Omer, wasn't it Rava who just said that mukab tzamid patil is matzio, achi pachek rubo, has to be mostly ruined? No, that's true, but lo kashya. Ha barav ravei, ha bezutri, it depends what the shear is of that kli. If you've got a large kli, or you've got a small kli. If you've got a small kli, then a motzi rimon destroys its shem kli. If you've got a large kli, then it would have to be rov that destroys the kli. Now Tosva says, can you give me a technical definition of a large kli or a small kli? That's not, I mean, that's not a shear. The Gemara would have to be giving a shear. Therefore, says the Re, the point is just the opposite. A large, it's whatever comes first, is the point. A large kli will become batal even if it's kamotzi rimon. A small kli, the motzi rimon would be larger than a robe. So then over there, it's enough to have a robe, and you don't need the shear of rimon. The exact opposite of Rashi. Because this way, you're telling me a clear cut, yeah, you're telling me, whichever comes first, motzi rimon or robe. The opposite. In Zutri, you don't need a rimon, because the definition of Zutri is where rove is less than rimon. That's the definition of Zutri. Tosfos is saying the definition is built in, because I'm giving you an either or based on whichever comes first. Whereas according to Rashi, I mean, you're not telling me anything. You know, what does that mean, a big kli? Yes, big kli being what? Okay, so that's how Rashi at Tosfos wins. The question, of course, is that what was Rava's objection to Ravasi? Somebody comes along and says, I heard the shear is motzi rimon. I mean, there is a shear of motzi rimon. Why is he like making this crazy case of a tzami celestial on something where it happens to be the correct size in which motzi rimon is a thing? So that of tzami celestial, there's such an easy, simple explanation. I heard that a kli cheres was miyuchid for rimonim is batal in motzi rimon, and you can't be miyuchid it for use once it gets to that level. And that would have been the most obvious. Is that what you thought the meaning is? As soon as you heard that, I mean, that's what you would have immediately explained. But we'll see. There is another. I mean, what would be the point of saying it? Because we'll see. There's another shita coming up that talks about that argues actually and holds nikiv to motzi zayit. There's no way to be miyachid and so on. Okay. I mean, Tosis is bothered by this. He says, look, I mean, you'll have to say that the mashma'ut of what it was that Ravasi was saying was that we're talking about some standard. I mean, so either the standard is the maximum, meaning the maximal case in which a kli will make a difference, which is the tzamid pasil, you know. Or you're telling me, whatever the case may be, I mean, if it's whatever the case may be, then this is a strange statement, because certainly the norm is zayit and not rimon. But I mean, it's definitely a little bit disturbing. Okay, gentlemen, with those interesting issues. My cousin? That's the one who's...
Yes.
Is that his photo? The nice guy? No, he's a cousin of mine. Except that there's about 50 of them with that name. So you'll have to be... You have to, when you talk about Weinbergs, you have to give two generations of parents. So tell me who it is. Yossi, Ben... Yes. He's a blondie?
Yeah.
I know who he is. He's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cutie. Okay. We do Gar Chazorah today.
Tomorrow 9:30.
Bezrat Hashem. Doing our brief review here. Godelet, Tochelet, Kokeset. What if we start there? Sorry, Galat on the base. Godelet, Tochelet, Kokeset. Bishumai Machai. The Omer of Amen, 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 Kofelet b'shem kotevet, kokezet b'shem tova. Amri rabboni kamei rabbi avu, waa, v'chi derech harig avakak, derech tiv avakak, derech tiv avakak, elo amri rabbi avu, v'didi mefarshi v'minai de rabbi yosi v'rabbi chanina, kokelet b'shem tzovat, kodelet v'kezet b'shem bone, what? Binyin b'kach, in, k'dedorish rabbi shimon v'menasya, ויבן השם אלוקים את הצלה, מלמד שקילאה הקדוש ברוך הוא לטבה, זה ידיעה אצל אדם, שכן בקרחי הים קוראים את קליאטה לאיל בריטה. תן ילבי שמן בן אלעזר אומר גדלת וכלת וכסף לעצמה, תורה, וחברתה חייבת. לכן היה רבי שמעון בן אלעזר אומר, משום רבי אליעזר, אישה לא תעביר סרק על פניה, בפני שצובעת. תן רבן, החולה והמחבץ מגבין כגוגר, המחבד והמחבץ והרודך על הדבש, שגג בשבס חייפתס, היזד ביום דבלוק, 40 דברי בליעזר, וחכמים אומרים, איך הזה ואיך הזה אינו אלא משום שבות. רמנחם בגוריה איקלו לנער דעה, בואו, הנה, חולה משומיים מחייב. אמר לו, משום חולה, of course. מגבין משומיים מחייב, משום מגבין. מגבין משומיים מחייב, משום מגבין. אומר לי, רק וכתוב, כאן היא בעד מהבי מבי. עד תשאל בית מדרוש, אומר לי, חולב חייב משום מפרק, מחבץ חייב משום בורר, מגבין חייב משום בונה. המחבד, המרבץ והרודך, הלא דבש, שרק בשבת חייב חטס, היזד ביום טוב, לא קרבו, יזד בבליעזר, אומר בלעזר, I want to explain, my time in בבליעזר. תכתיב, היתבול אותך ביערת הדבש, וכי מה עניין יער יצא דבש? אלא לומר לך, מה יער התולש ממנו בשבת חייב חטב, אף חלות דבש הרד ממנו בשבת חייב חטב. עמים אשר זילך במחוז, אמרתיים במה יום רבונן, ימעתי לה שהוא יגומות, אך עלי כגומות. רב התוסבה, אשכחיל רבין את הכל מצטער מהבלה, ואמר למר קשיש ברגע רב, אשכחיל רב, אשכחיל גם מצטער מהבלה. אמר לי, לא סובה למה, ועוד את עניה, הרוצה לרבץ את ביתו בשבת מביא הריבה מלא מים, ורוחית פניו בזווית זו, ידיו בזווית זו, רגליו בזווית זו, ונמצא הבית מתרבץ מאליו. אמר לי, וופס, לבדעתי. תנא איש החכמה מרבץ את ביתה בשבת, ויעיד נא דסביר לקרב שמעון, שורי אפילו לא כתחילה. התולש ביציץ נקוף חיה, ושאינו נקוף פתוח, ורבי שמעון פותר בזה ובזה. לא מלא הבעיה לרבה, פעמים לרבחי ברב לרב. סנן רבי שמעון פותר בזה ובזה. אלמה, נקוב לרבי שמעון, כשאינו נקוב משהו אליי. ועמידו רבי שמעון אומר, אין בין נקוב לשאינו נקוב, אלא להכשיר זרעים בעולם. אומר לה, לכל מילה רבי שמעון כתבוש משהו אליי. בת שיינה לעין תומעה, שהתורה ריפתה תערה עצו זרעים, שמה הכל זרע זרוע, אשר יזרע. אוי מיני הוא סבא מרבי זרע. שורש כנגד הנקב, מה לי אומר רבי שמעון? אשתי, לא אומר לגלמי. זימנו כל האשכד יעתי וכאמה, מודה רבי שמעון שניקה בכתי תהרתו, אמר לי, מן אשת השורש כנגד נקב בוי מנב, ולא אמרת לגלמידה, ניקה בכתי תהרתו מבוי, אמר רבי יתמר לא הודה רבי זרע, אוף יהודי יתמר, מודה רבי שמעון שניקה במטה רביעית, אמר רבי חמש מידות בכלי חרס, ניקה כמותי משכה תהור מלתם יגיסטר, אבל עדיין כלי לקדש בו מחתק, ניקה בקונס משכה תהור מלקדש בו מחתק, ועדיין כלי הוא להקשר בו זרעים. ניקה כשורש קטן, טהור מלהקשר בו זרעים, ועדיין כלי הוא לקבל בו זיתים. ניקה כמותי זיתים, טהור מלקבל בו זיתים, ועדיין כלי הוא אפוס מיוחד לקבל בו רימונים. ניקה כמותי רימונים, טהור מכלום, ואם הוא קף צמיד פתיל, עד שיפחד רובו. אומר רבתי, שמעתי, כלי חרש שיעורו כמותי רימון. אומר לי רובה, that doesn't make sense, שמה לא שמעת, אבל הוא קף צמיד פתיל. What? רוב הודי אמר, מוקב צמיד פתיל עד שיפחי גרובו. בבקשה, הו ברב רבי, הו בסוטרי.
9:30,
that's right.